Old Friends. You know, you're more beautiful than ever. Savine looked sideways at him, one long-lashed eye showing under the brim of her hat, rocking gently with the movement of her horse. Are you flattering me, Your Grace?
I'm doing my bloody best, said Leo.
She rode well. What didn't she do well? Perched elegantly side-saddle, with her whip-hand resting on the slight swell of her belly, steering her horse with the same effortless confidence she steered everything else. But he still worried.
Sure you don't want to go in the carriage, though?
In the jungles of Yashtavit, women hunt while 8 months pregnant. Up in the north, they work in the fields until they give birth. Honestly, it's much the same these days for the factory girls in Adua. A little ride will do no harm.
I reckon if a factory girl, a northern peasant or a dusky huntress were offered a break in a carriage, they'd likely take it.
By all means, you can sit in it then. And she tapped her horse's flank with her crop and moved ahead. Perhaps there'd been a part of him that had hoped the rebellion would never happen, that it would come to nothing more than after-dinner bluster with the fellows from the Open Council. A part that had looked forward to Savine finding out so she could give an indulgent sigh and pat the back of his hand and put a sensible stop to the whole business. But to his amazement, she'd pounced on the scheme with the total lack of doubt she brought to everything, and applied all her formidable powers to making it not only a reality, but a success. He felt hugely excited, of course. They were on a grand adventure, of course. And doing the right thing, of course. It was just that he also, sometimes in quiet moments, felt strangely horrified. But there was no way back now. He'd look an utter fool. And once Savine got her teeth into a thing, it was happening, and that was all there was to it. He caught her up, leaving their guards and servants behind.
By the dead, I'm glad you came.
I've always wanted to see the North.
So you've come for the sights, not to make sure I don't do something reckless?
I can do two things at once. That one eye slipped across to him, and she nudged her mount closer to speak softly. This is important. We need allies.
I know how Northmen think, said Leo. I grew up with them.
Of course. These are your friends. I am only here to help. Haven't I been a help to you in Austenholm?
You've been a bloody marvel in Austenholm.
In fact, she'd proved so good at running the governing meetings that he'd stopped attending altogether. He was still lord and master and had the last word, as she was always telling him, but why use it when her word sounded so damn good?
I do worry about my mother, though.
There's no need. She'll see Durin drilling the men, raising more. She's no fool. Clever people are prone to believe what they want to, Leo, just like everyone else. What your mother wants most in the world is to think the best of you. Leo blinked.
Oh.
I told her you are growing up and taking your responsibilities seriously, and the new companies are all part of your plan for lasting peace. You're raising more soldiers because Northmen only respect force. Our talks with Stour will go that much better if he knows we're well armed. She was full of praise for your strategy.
Oh, said Leo again.
That was a first. And then I begged for her help and loaded her down with enough work on the new tax system to keep 5 clever people busy. What your mother wants second most in the world is to feel useful. Leo felt that witless smile on his face, the one he usually ended up with when he came to Savine with a problem, then found she'd solved it weeks ago. With her on his side, how could he fail?
What the hell would I do without you?
He murmured. Luckily for you, and she touched him firmly on the thigh with her riding crop and caused a pleasurable stirring in his trousers, it is not a problem you will ever have to face. And they rode from the trees into the open. He gave a delighted laugh to see the gates of Ufrith, dappled sunlight shifting on its lichen-spattered walls. He remembered how it had felt the first time he came here as a boy. The excitement, the romance, the freedom, to be in the north, the land of heroes. He spurred on through a cluster of new huts and houses, leaving Antaup and Jin and the rest behind with the carriage and the wagons. Sabine kept pace with him through the gates and clattering down the cobbled way beyond, the dirty-faced people in their colourless clothes gazing up in wonder as they passed. A lot had changed. New buildings where Stour Nightfall burned the old ones, maybe. Grander buildings, stone and slate rather than wood and wattle.
Good old Ufrith.
He took a long breath of that familiar air, sheep dung, wood smoke and sea salt, but sweet with happy memories for him.
I spent the best years of my childhood here. I know every alley of the place.
That wouldn't be too difficult. Sabine gave a scornful little laugh.
I thought you said this was one of the North's greatest cities.
It is. He had to admit, seeing it fresh through her eyes, used to the scale of Adua and the pomp of the Agriant, it looked a mean, poor, primitive place. For some reason that nettled him.
Things might not be so grand here as in Middleland, but they're honest, he snapped. They're good people. They have a code and they stick to it. They're great fighters, brought up with swords in their hands. Rikka will be a staunch ally. She's one of the warmest, truest, most straightforward people I know.
Sabine looked calmly away from him.
Perhaps you should have married her.
They rode on in silence. Leo knew the pattern of the crooked rafters in the Dogman's Hall by heart, remembered climbing among the carved animals, trees and faces, squatting in the shadows, watching the Dogman argue with his named men below. The bench with the worn black sheepskin was still there, where the old chieftain used to listen to his people's complaints, pointed chin propped on one fist. The fire pit still glowed, ripples of red and orange rustling through the embers, the heat pressing on Leo's face as he came close. But there'd been changes. The hall had always bustled with life in the Dogman's day. Now there was a brittle silence, which made Leo feel guilty over his every footstep. At this time, in this season, the shutters should have been wide open and the sea breeze washing in. Now hides were hung in the windows, painted with circles of runes, sinking the hall into gloom. There was a new smell, sweet and strange and sharp, like burned cakes. There were skulls on the wall in a shadowy herd, horned and antlered skulls of ram and bull and stag, and great animals he didn't know. Animals of the utmost north, maybe, where the sun doesn't shine and the world blurs into myth.
Leo! Sabine! I've missed you!
And Rikka swaggered from the shadows, arms spread wide, dangling with bracelets and thongs and charms into the shaft of light from the smoke hole. Leo almost shrank back in shock. There was a great dark stain across her face, a tattoo, black runes, black lines, black arrows in a crescent from her cheek, covering one side of her forehead to the bridge of her nose. Her right eye was turned white with just a milky pinprick in the centre, while the hungry pupil of the left had swallowed the whole iris, yawning like a grave pit.
Ah!
She waved a hand in front of her face. It used to be round, soft. Now it was all sharp ridges and shadowy hollows.
All this, I forget.
She tapped at her skull with one long finger, the hair on the left all clipped back short, while on the right it was grown to wild tufts and tangles.
Can't see it from in here, but I've heard it said the tattoos and the eyes and all can be off-putting.
Not at all,
croaked Leo.
Just unexpected.
The gold ring through her nose shifted as she smiled. He didn't know the words for that smile, but warm, true, and straightforward weren't the ones.
You remember I used to have fits. Leo remembers, I reckon.
And she winked at him. She'd had one the first time they'd lain together, after all, both stark naked in a hay pile.
This is the cure.
The cure?
Rikka stuck her fingertip in her milky right eye.
This eye fought the other, so it had to go. My vision's come much cleaner now.
She leaned close and muttered it out of the corner of her mouth.
Don't shit myself no more neither, and I'm still me.
She punched him on the arm, good-natured but hard.
More or less.
Could I look closer? Asked Savine, stepping towards her, not put off in the least. I have seen a very great number of painted faces, but never such fine work. And she put a finger under Ricker's chin and tipped her face gently into the light. I think it's beautiful. And she traced the lines of the tattoo with her fingertips. It could not be more you.
Ricker gave a delighted laugh, reminded Leo just for a moment of how she used to be. Oh, I like your wife, Leo. Best thing about you, I reckon. You kept the runes, I see.
They feel like good luck. Savine touched the little wooden tablets she wore around her neck.
And you kept the emeralds.
They feel like high value,
said Ricker, pulling them up with her crooked little finger so they cut white into her long, lean throat.
I have another gift for you.
And Savine waved Zuri from the shadows, a length of cloth over her arm, a vivid red that seemed almost to shine in the muddy grey hall, golden stitching gleaming in the hem.
This is Zuri, my companion.
Is it?
Ricker narrowed her eyes, then slid them, sly as a cat, towards Savine.
Sure you aren't hers?
I have heard it said, God puts us all where we are meant to be, said Zuri.
Wouldn't know, said Ricker. We don't see much of him up here.
She took the cloth and shook it out with a snap, holding it up to the light.
Ooh, you give the best presents.
Suljuk silk, said Savine, from beyond the Thousand Isles. I thought perhaps you could make a dress from it, or a hanging, or...
Ricker was already wrapping it around herself, ending up with something between a scarf, a cloak, and a hood. Zuri cocked her head on one side.
That works.
I love it.
Ricker smiled as she rubbed her cheek against the shining fabric.
And I see you've got a gift for Leo, too.
She dropped down on her knees, staring at Savine's belly.
Can I feel?
Well, I suppose.
Ricker slid her arms around Savine and pressed her tattooed cheek into her stomach, making her gasp. Savine stared at Leo, but all he could do was shrug.
Oh,
crooned Ricker, eyes closed as she snuggled in tight.
I'd expect something special from the two of you, but this will change the world.
Where's your friend Isernifael? Asked Leo. And call Shivers. I swear you're the only person in the world he likes.
I send him off to make new friends. The Protectorate's small. We need every friend we can get.
You should have come to us.
I knew you'd be coming to me.
Leo tried to smile, but it wasn't easy. Every time he saw a hint of that gangly girl he'd played hide-and-seek with in this very hall, she'd flash that sly smile and turn that strange left eye on him, and he'd feel as if she was looking right into him, right through him. The woman he'd known was vanished, sure as her father, and he was shocked at how much he missed them. Savine, meanwhile, gnawed at her meat, lips and fingers shiny with grease, a pile of stripped bones on the table in front of her.
She might look like a doll, murmured Ricker in Northern, but she eats like a warrior.
Leo laughed.
Something I should know about? Asked Savine.
She... wonders if you want a fork.
When I was in Valbec, I ate with my fingers.
Savine ripped some gristle from her meat with her teeth and spat it into the fire pit as neatly as any named man.
When I ate at all, I came to the north to see how things are done here, not to do things my way regardless.
Very open-minded, said Ricker.
But you didn't come here to improve your table manners. The two of you are after something, or my name's not Sticky Ricker.
Savine's raised brow told Leo it was time to get to business.
You're right. I wanted to see Ulfrith, and I wanted to see you, but you're right. I need your help, Ricker.
Nought my father wouldn't have done for an old friend.
And we go way back, eh? Used to wrestle on this very floor, didn't we? What do you need?
Your father's warriors. Your warriors, I mean.
Who are we fighting?
I hope they won't have to fight.
But we both know hopes can turn out barren. You wouldn't be asking for warriors if you didn't have a fight in mind.
Leo glanced towards Savine one last time, almost hoping she might give the faintest shake of her head and they could forget the whole business. But she narrowed her eyes and gave the faintest nod instead.
"We're fighting the Closed Council," said Leo.
Rika slowly eased back on her father's bench, puffing out her hollow cheeks.
"I know you like a scrap, Leo, but did you think of picking a smaller one?"
"Few of us get to pick our battles," said Savine. "The battles pick us.
Maybe you should let this one pick someone else."
"You saw what they were like in the war."
Leo sat forward angrily,
promising everything, giving nothing. The Union abandoned Ulfrith, abandoned your father, abandoned you. But Angland never did. I never did.
He realized as he said it, sitting beside his new wife, that Rika might see it differently, and he cleared his throat and frowned down at the table.
"Calling in the favors, then," she said. "Where's your next stop, young lion?"
No point trying to trick her. She could always see right through him, and honesty can be a kind of weapon, too.
"Carlion," he said, "as you've no doubt guessed.
To beg for the great wolf's help."
Rika bared her teeth and snarled at him with sudden, shocking fury.
"The man who burned half this city on a whim, who promised to send my guts to my father in a box, who killed my friends and yours, who'd have killed you if my long eye hadn't seen it coming. Break what they love," he said. "You'd have me link arms with my worst enemy?"
"Sometimes we must use one enemy to fight another," said Savine. Rika curled back her lip and sucked a shred of meat from between her teeth.
"Oh, you're a clever one, Lady Brock. You could crawl through a keyhole, I reckon, even with a swollen belly. But last time we met, it was on your ground. Up here, enemies aren't so easily spun into friends."
"Oh, I doubt the rules are so very different," said Savine. "Ulfrith needs protection. That is why it became a protectorate. King Orso and his closed council have shown they will not help. Side with us. We can keep the balance between you and Nightfall. Turn us down, your time is already running out. It really is as simple as that."
"So I risk everything, and in return I get what I've already got?"
Rika snorted.
"And a scrap of red cloth, of course. You like making deals. If you were sat on my bench, what would you say to that one?"
"I would say it's the best you'll get," said Savine. Leo winced. He'd come to ask for help from an old friend, but now his wife was turning the whole thing into a hard-headed bargain, one with more than a whiff of blackmail about it. He held up his hands before things got any worse.
"We're friends. I risked my life for you, for Ulfrith."
He grimaced as he shifted his leg.
"I've got the scars, but I'd do the same again. I helped you against your enemies. I'm asking you to help me against mine."
Savine sat back, sour, wiping her fingers on a cloth. Rika sat back, sulky, hands on the bench behind her and her bony shoulders up around her ears.
"You're asking a lot, Leo, of me and of my men. Don't pretend you're not. I need to think on it. Maybe the long eye will open in the night. Show me the answer."
"I understand. It's a big decision."
The uncomfortable silence stretched, and Leo looked down awkwardly at the floor. That was when he saw the circle painted there around the table where they ate. 5 strides or so across, the same kind he fought Stour Nightfall in. The kind men of the North had been fighting in since before words were written.
"What's the circle for?"
Ricker's face slid into shadow, the gleam of one eye in the darkness.
"Folk who don't agree with me,"